Hi, Small Subjects listeners. We want to hear from you. Click on the link on the blog where we post photos from each episode, www.boxdioramas.com/smallsubjects, or on our social media posts, and comment on anything we've said in this or any episode, or pose a question you'd like to hear us answer.
There's no time limit, but please try to focus your comments because we'd love to include them in full on the show. Thanks.
Hi everyone, it's Chris Meddings here from Inside the Armour Publications, and I'd like to remind you about Models for Ukraine Volume 2. Models for Ukraine Volume 1 raised about £19,000, I think that's $22,000, for humanitarian aid for Ukraine, and we're hoping that Models for Ukraine Volume 2 will do even better, but I have to be honest, it's going slower. So if you'd like to support Ukraine, if you'd like to buy a book full of fantastic modellers, including Calvin Tan and other figure modellers, as well as armour, ships and aircraft, then please do go to InsideTheArmour.com and order your copy of Models for Ukraine Volume 2 today. That's InsideTheArmour.com. Thanks. Now back to Jim and Barry on Small Subjects.
Welcome to Small Subjects, Big Ideas About Miniatures and Modeling. I'm Jim DeRogatis in Chicago.
And I'm Barry Biedeker in Salt Lake City.
Happy New Year, Barry.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
You didn't sound too happy there, but...
I never do.
You know, you never do. But we have made it, Mr. Biedeker, to our 31st episode.
Yeah.
Since July 2021.
Yeah, I think that's quite an accomplishment.
I agree. And we've got some great interviews lined up for 2023. None of them have come together in time for this show. So we thought we would do the sequel we had mentioned, promised, I would dare say, when we did back in September, Tools and Other Stuff We Can't Live Without.
Yeah, I think...
That was one of our most popular episodes.
It was, surprisingly. To me, anyway. But...
Well, every modeler loves tools.
Yeah, we were thinking that this might be one of our last episodes, though, because we'll probably upset some people.
You know, look, I'm a professional critic and have worn the investigative journalism hat. Upsetting people is my, it's like old news to me, man.
Yeah. You think we'll get lawsuits, though?
No. We are going to talk as consumers about tools and other stuff that we think suck.
Or that at least haven't worked for us.
Yes, I want to give the proviso that these products that we purchased, paid cash money, hard-earned cash money. You and I are not made of dough. Mm-hmm. Lots of people were complaining after the Tools We Can't Live Without episodes, how they had to go out and spend a boatload of cash on all these things we talked about, including me. I spent like $150 or more. Which I always, this is you and me at any show. I don't know how you do it, but you scope out fairly quickly everything that's on all the vendors' tables. And then you drag me by the elbow here and there and over everywhere and say, you need this, you need that, you need this. And often I do, and I didn't know I did. Yeah. Every once in a while, including a couple of things we'll talk about today, I wind up buying stuff that doesn't work for me, and so do you. And I think as consumers, we have the right to talk about it. But yes, it may be user error.
Right, or sometimes things just don't work out for whatever reason. You might not even be doing things right, and you just don't like it. That's fine.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, you know, bearing in mind, the reason it's fun to talk about tools is nothing beats having the exactly right tool for the job.
Right. Very true.
You know, it is so frustrating trying to reinvent the wheel, and then you see a tool, and when it works and you buy it and it makes life easier and things just come out better, that's fantastic. And when it doesn't... That's the subject of today's episode.
Well, I think every modeler has a pile of stuff that they've bought and regret.
Tons of stuff. Tons of stuff. You want to lead us off?
Sure. So one thing that, and I don't know what you're going to talk about, but one thing that we've talked about recently is something that I got a couple years ago, and I know other people think they're great. Maybe this is user error or it just doesn't work for me, but I've never gotten along with the glue loopers.
No, I hate those.
It never gives me any advantage over just making my own, you know, super glue applicator out of wire or a toothpick or airbrush needle or whatever.
Well, you know I love the toothpicks. Yeah, but those weird curved loopers that have a little hole in the middle of it. What is the point?
Well, I think a lot of people seem to like them, like I said. Some really good modelers and some modelers that are very picky about tools. So maybe I need to try it some more, but I had a problem even getting the glue to flow. So I don't know. I know that there are plenty of people that like these. I don't think that we're going to hurt their business with all five people that listen to us, but I don't know. I think I need to give them more of a shot. But I usually end up just using either the old trick of a sewing needle with the eye cut, you know, snapped off, or I'll make my own kind of quill pen almost type of thing with a toothpick by just splitting the end. Have you ever tried that?
Yeah, I have. And I've also sanded down innumerable toothpicks to a really fine point. Pins. Yeah. Toothpicks. I don't like about those glue loopers. Well, first of all, they get clogged with glue fairly quickly.
You can take that off, though, right? You can just burn it off. But I just can't get it to flow off of the applicator. So.
No, I can't get it to flow off. I wind up having to clean it when it gets clogged. And also, I don't like having to use an X-Acto handle. It just seems thick and unwieldy.
Yeah, that part doesn't bother me so much. But where it really should be useful is for the very runny super glue, the original super glue, not the thick stuff, right?
Yeah,
because that can be difficult.
I use Zappa Gap exclusively.
Well, that can be difficult to pick up some of that watery stuff and you know, have it flow off of something. But like I said, if you split the end of a toothpick or make a wire loop out of fine wire yourself...
Yeah.
Or a needle. It just seems to work better for me. But,
all right. Yeah. Well, we're both on the same page about that. I think you're going to agree about this, too. You kind of blew my mind when we were talking about tools we can't live without, when you mocked the Dremel. And I have always loved my Dremel.
I don't remember mocking the Dremel.
Well, you were encouraging, you know, me to get a Proxon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
And I did. And I loved the Proxon for the most part. I didn't love having to buy a separate U.S. power converter.
Yeah.
And it's a little bulky the way it sits on my modeling desk, which has precious little space ever. I have one of those Dremel hanging attachments, you know, so the Dremels hang on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to diss the Dremel flexi shaft.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Now, I bought this thing, you know, and it is so unwieldy, and I have one of those hanging things. My regular Dremel sits on it, and it just does just fine. The flexi shaft, though, is big. It's bulky. I don't see much advantage, although I've been using it forever because I don't know what happened to my old regular Dremel. I guess I could... take the flexi shaft off? I don't know. I haven't taken it off.
Yeah, it's just an attachment. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I could abandon it. You know, the regular Dremel is heavy and big, and so to get in for some really fine stuff is tough. But I find that the universal chuck on the flexi shaft never holds, and half the time I'm going to drill something and the drill bit sinks all the way in.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I had a flexi shaft attachment to a Dremel once years ago, and I bought it and I immediately returned it because it was just too cumbersome.
It is cumbersome. It's supposed to make your life easier.
Yeah, but I've heard other people say, yeah, that's not a real flex shaft. You want to go to like a Fordham or a dental tool for flex shafts, which those can be a bit spendy.
Well, Proxon wasn't cheap, especially with the power converter. Like I said, I'm liking it except for one thing.
Yeah.
That little metal button that you have to press to loosen the universal chuck and change tips is really, you know, it hurts my thumb, and it's hard to press down, and it's just, like, not the best.
Really? I wonder if they've changed them recently.
It's a little metal button, shiny, and it's just, it's a pain in the neck.
Well, similar to what Dremels have, to lock the shaft.
Yeah, Dremel, well, some Dremels have more of a, like, contoured finger button.
See, I don't...
mine,
I'm just
too.
Trying the one on mine to lock the shaft, and it's no, I mean, it's no problem whatsoever. So I'm wondering if they changed it. Mine's a little bit...
They might have changed it.
Older model.
I'll send you a picture of mine. You know, look, the thing about tools is I want to pick it up, and I want it to work. I don't want a second's aggravation. And I don't think, you know, especially when, you know, I mean, the Proxon with the power, $150 or something I spent, you know, and I'm mostly happy with it. But then you look at one design flaw. You know, people always talk about Apples and how well they're designed, or they were for a very long time. Now Apple is getting annoying.
We don't want to get into religion on this show.
So. No, that's true. Or politics, and Apple is both for some. you know, I hate when somebody changes a design that was working into a design that suddenly is inferior.
Yeah, no, that's very frustrating.
It is. And have you got another tool
actually,
that sucks or product that sucks?
Well, speaking of Proxon, and this is something that I like most of their tools, or at least the ones that I use a couple a lot. The drill, what is it called?
I don't know. I have one Proxon that you convinced me to buy. I didn't know there was more. Now I'm going to have to spend more money.
It's that one it's that one that I'm talking about. The
Proxon rotary tool.
The rotary tool. Yeah. Why can't I think of the name? But I bought to cut out, you know how I make the front face of my boxes with just the front cut out. I don't use a mat or a regular frame for my box dioramas.
Your box fronts are meticulous.
Well, I cut the square hole out of a piece of plywood for the viewing window. And so I bought a Proxon mini jigsaw. Mm. It's one of their in the Micromot line, just like their rotary tool. Uses the same power supply and everything. And it has one of the worst design features I have ever seen on a power tool, ever. Because the on-off switch is on the back of the tool. Hold on one sec.
You're going to show it to me? I don't know how, in a space that looks to be no wider than 4 feet, you have everything always at fingertip readiness.
Over years and years, I've simplified my setup.
I'm constantly doing that too. But you even have your airbrush by your workstation, don't you?
I to the side. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have to go to the garage to work on that and work on my power tools and.
Well, but there's advantages to that. Then you don't have to worry about the smell inside the house and that.
Yeah, but you know, in the interest of, like I was saying, everything. I want to pick up a tool and use it. Boom. You know, yeah, I'm forever like, is that in the garage or is this in a drawer here? Is it?
That definitely happens to me.
Yeah. All right. So I'm looking at your Proxon jigsaw.
So you hold it like this, right?
Yeah.
It's a great, I mean, it works great. But you turn it on with a switch at the back end of the jigsaw.
Instead of a button that should be white by your finger where you're holding it.
It's impossible to turn it on with the hand you're operating it with. Ugh. And if you have a jigsaw running, you don't want to, you don't want to take your hand that you're holding the piece with and have to turn it off. I mean, really, any tool like this should work with a trigger like a regular jigsaw.
Yeah.
You should have a trigger that operates it. Now, I think the best way to do this would be with the foot switch. I think that's probably what I'll do if I ever use this again. But it's actually unsafe, in my opinion, to have that switch. Because if you can't, I mean, you let go of it or something, you know, the blade breaks or something happens, it gets jammed, There's just kickback going
a lot of times, especially when you're using thin plywood.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So that really bugs me.
We know your fear in general of saws, power tools that cut. We've talked about that a few times. So given that, I can understand your hesitancy. You know, you talked to me last year. This year's Christmas present from me to me was a decent airbrush vacuum center, you know, spray booth, right?
Spray booth, yeah.
Got a nice one.
Which one did you get?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up and tell you. I don't have a window in the garage. I got glass block, and it's inconveniently placed to my workbench anyway. So, I got the two fan model, and, you know, I figure, well, it's better than nothing, and it'll at least contain the overspray, because the overspray gets everywhere.
Yeah,
I'm a sloppy airbrusher. We'll have to talk about that at some point, but, because I just want it to work like a spray can. Pshht!
Yep. Yeah,
You know, I'm impatient. But I got that this year. Last year was the Micromark mini jigsaw, right? Mm.
Yeah.
Which has been, I use a lot of half-inch by half-inch square balsa strip wood, right, to attach my frames, to build reveals, all sorts of stuff, right? So to cut those, it's fine. But anything lengthwise, if you want to rip a thin sheet of plywood or balsa or basswood, you know, this stupid blade guard gets in the way.
Stupid blade guard.
Well, I mean, a blade guard on a saw is a good idea, and I value mine on my big table saw for when I'm cutting plywood exteriors for my boxes. But, you know, if I'm cutting basswood, I mean, strips, you know, I can do it, right? So it works well, especially when I got rid of or subbed out a fine tooth blade, which cost me another $30 or $40, right?
Mm-hmm.
It should come with three blades, you know, fine, medium, you know, and slightly beefier. But it didn't. Came with one blade, even though it told me it would come with three. And so I had to buy the other blade, right? So, you know, because, I mean, you don't want splintering on a quarter inch piece of basswood, you know, or that craft plywood, you know, so but anything longer, you know, first of all, the rail guards, like, I can't figure out how to use them. They're just not user friendly. And second of all, the this blade guard gets in the way if you're cutting anything more than 1/8 of an inch. So I had to go into it and take out the blade guard.
So it's a blade guard on the jigsaw. So
yes,
I'm having a hard time picturing what it looks like. But
it's a really small jigsaw, right? A table saw, mini table saw. It's
maybe, table saw.
Yeah, mini table saw. You convinced me it would be a good purchase.
Because you said jigsaw. So
I'm sorry. Okay. I mean, I'm talking about a mini table saw.
All right.
I only have a big jigsaw. I should get one of those. I say you're going to make me spend more money. I should get one of those handheld finer. You know, because the Dremel jigsaw attachment is even worse than what you just showed me from Proxxon.
Yeah.
It's just really bulky and but a mini jigsaw would be used. Anyway, this mini table saw, I had to go in and take the blade guard off if I want to rip anything that's, you know, thicker than 1/8 of an inch.
Because the guard doesn't ride up on top of the...
No, it doesn't ride up like your main table saw would.
So the... I don't know. The operating a table saw... I know there are some applications
where... You're afraid of table saws, I know.
Well, I think for good reason, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen a more unpredictable power tool than a table saw. But
a heart attack the first time I used a table saw on my own.
Oh,
you know, Shep, our friend and mentor, you know, had a couple of tools in his basement, right, from the days when he would be making his boxes. And he's going to show me how to build my exterior box. And, you know, everything in Shep's house, including Shep, was slightly slanted and cockeyed and tilted.
Yeah, I think I saw his table saw once, and it should not have been used.
Including the table saw. You know, and he had long since gotten rid of the ripping guide, right? You know, which I love.
The fence.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you
he
keep
got
your
rid
table,
of the fence. How the hell he did got, he? Cut?
He did everything by eyeball. He would use the T square and draw a line, and then he'd cut down a piece of plywood by eyeball following his line.
Wow.
And there's no, no safety. He still had the guard on the blade, but without a fence, I use my fence religiously, and I try to keep my table saw meticulously clean and not bang it up so that I can rely on the fence when I'm cutting something at 7 7/8 of an inch that I'm certain that I can use the ripping guide set it, and it will come out 7 7/8, right? But with Sheb was like, and the blade was a little tilted, and the first time I went to rip a piece of plywood on my own without him doing it, because he made me nervous as hell having him do it. After he shows me the first time, I'm like, oh my god, I'm going to keep him away from the blade, right? And then I was doing it myself in the basement, and something kicked back, and it hit me right above the left eye, and I had this gouge. Yeah, but that was the last and worst, first, last, worst table saw misadventure I had.
Well, I got to tell you, wait a minute. No, you had another kickback incident.
Yeah?
Remember?
I can't recall. No.
It kicked back, hit you in the chest, knocked you down, you fell on the floor, and that's when you actually found a part that you had lost.
Oh, well, then that was fortuitous. That was I meant to do that.
Now, first off, I have to say, nobody has any business operating a table saw without having somebody who's an expert show them how it works.
There's videos on YouTube.
And show them the things that can go wrong.
Yeah. Well, I had Shep.
Right. Yeah. But I think in-person demonstration is going to be worth doing for any of that stuff. But
no, I subsequently got one. My father-in-law, he had many careers. He was a cop. He was a principal. He was a co-owner of a pizza joint on the south side of Chicago. And he taught shop for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, for a couple of Christmases in a row, he got me a bunch of tools, one after another every year, and then he would show me how to use them. So that was handy.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I had shop. I went to an all-boys Catholic school. You would think, like, shop would be every third class, but we didn't have a shop class.
I grew up in a town that was basically a steel town, and the steel industry was dying at the time, but everybody took shop. You had to take metal shop or something like that. So,
I wish I had had that experience. Well, I'm gonna go next, and I'm actually gonna lump all these together. I did not realize until I was digging them out from the nether reaches of my tool collection, nether reaches because I don't like any of these products. I didn't realize they were all made by the same company. So this gent is not going to be happy with this episode. All right, first up is the grab handler.
Mm.
Now, I don't do a lot of armor. Okay. Yeah. But I do a lot of scenery and I make a lot of handles, right? Mm-hmm. So I bought this triangular thing, right? And first of all, it was like welded shut. It took me forever to like unscrew it, right? Then second of all, it's got such a minimal range of handles to put your wire in, your brass rod or your wire, and bend it. It's been utterly useless every single time I've tried it, and it was not cheap, and it's a heavy piece of steel. It looks like it should work, two pieces of steel to come together. And, like nothing has beat the cheap Joann fabric square-tipped like wire bender tool I bought.
Yeah, the jewelry pliers?
Yeah, the jewelry pliers, for people who do beaded necklaces. Have you ever got one of those grab handlers to work?
They're okay. I've had as bad a time as you with the one I have. I got one from UMM.
Mine is a Mission Models.
Oh, okay. So it's the nice anodized.
Yeah. Well, it looks nice. It just don't work. And it's not enough of a variety of size for handles.
The biggest problem I have with the one I got is it's it's an okay enough tool, but it's just, you can't bend wire with a sharp enough bend with it.
Yeah.
Easily. So yeah. For me, just the pliers are easier to, you know, handle, and I mark a spot with the right width, yeah, and I bend it over and I can press it against the jaws of the pliers. I can do that with the grab handler too, but it's just not quite as convenient.
No, it was an utterly worthless purchase, and so too was my Etchmate.
Etchmate, okay, yep, I remember those.
The photo etch, well, you know, the one I had was a significant piece of metal, now apparently there's a new version out that's plastic.
Many companies have released it, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Mission models here, and those are the. I've spent a lot of money with them, and nothing I've bought from them has worked. And this Etchmate, you know, now I don't like photo etch overall. There are certain things we've discussed this too, you know, like a radiator cover or something, where they're beautiful, right? You know, all those little fiddly bits that you have to bend three or four ways, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Every time I've cut it from the, you wouldn't call it a sprue, but the brass sheet.
The fret.
And the fret, and cleaned it up and put it in the Etchmate, you know, it either doesn't press down hard enough so that I could use the razor blade to lift up the piece to bend, or the razor blade won't fit under the piece, or... you know, I bend it and it breaks off right away because between the razor blade and the... it's been utterly pointless compared to, you know, square tip tweezers, well, which are also, an exercise in frustration.
Well, it always pays to have some really good tweezers for that. Some flat-ended tweezers or pliers.
Oh, but I got tweezers. I got tweezers, I got pliers, I got more tweezers and pliers than most jewelers have.
Well, the one I have, and I can't remember, I think this is by the original maker of the photo etch bending tool.
Oh, that's really simplified. Mine is way fancier and pointless.
I think this is the original one. I apologize, I can't remember who originally brought it out. But the thing I find it useful for is if you have a really long piece of photo etch, like a fender or something.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best use for it. These smaller pieces to bend small things, I haven't found as useful. But it can be pretty indispensable for that kind of thing.
I could see that. I don't know if... I guess I must have never done a long, like, rail guard, you know, armor guard fender type thing. I've just done these little pieces, and you know, the machine hasn't worked for me, and I'm like, why did I spend money on this?
I understand that
both of those products were Mission models, and so is the paint line I'm going to talk about now. At some point said I'm getting rid of all my Mission models paints, do you want them? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll take them. And you sent me like 40, right?
Yeah.
Cleaning out your space. And I never have, you know, one of my problems with airbrushing is I never seem to have the right color that I need, right? I'm out of green, I'm out of brown, I'm doing groundwork or whatever, wall, you know. So I thought, all right, the more airbrush paint I have, I tend to use Vallejo Air, works really well. I tend to use Tamiya, which works like a charm. I never have a problem. The Mission models collection you sent me, you know, in between different colors, the paint is really inconsistent how it behaves. It always tends to gum up my airbrush really bad. I mean, full strip down cleaning required after spraying one color. And yes, I do thin. I thin. 80-70%, never less than 70%, you know, using the Mission models product thinner, you know.
Yeah.
And still, it comes out like goop. And when you're just trying to spray some groundwork, even, you know, it shouldn't be that, life shouldn't be that hard. I have had horrible results with Mission models, entire paint line. And since you had like every color, and oh God, you are so meticulous. You had written in silver marker, and some bottles have tape and some have silver marker on top of the black cap, each color. You're just with a little dab of the color.
Because I had them in a drawer, so you know, you open up the drawer, it's hard to see what they are.
Well, I just really admired the 2 hours you must have spent doing that.
Maybe more like an hour. I mean, take an hour to do that, or you spend countless hours trying to sift through your paints and.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree. I just don't have the patience. I admire your patience.
Well, I didn't send those to you because I was just dumping them off. You know,
I know. I don't want it to seem like Barry gives me his garbage rather than throw it away.
Well, so sometimes some things will work for me and not you, and vice versa. Mm-hmm, it's you know, people have different preferences, and I know there are a lot of people who really like that paint, and there are some really good modelers who that's the paint they use.
Oh, I know. And people talk about how you know, when the paint sets, how wonderfully hard and chip-proof it is.
Mm, yeah, see, the thing that I've had... Well, let me get into that. But one thing I have to say about paint is, as I've gotten older, I guess, I've appreciated more and more paint that doesn't give me a hassle. And it's not difficult to work with.
Yeah.
And now that I have a spraying booth, a few years ago I didn't, but I have a spraying booth that I can vent outside, and I use a mask, I can paint with lacquers.
Right.
And lacquers are so much easier to deal with. Mm. If I had to use water-based paint, if I had no other choice, I would probably try Mission again and make them work. Because I've painted two tanks with them, and it worked okay. It was just too much work to get them to that point.
Why was it work?
Because of the biggest problem I had is you said they're chip proof, and I know you can do chipping with them. I've seen people do it, but I've seen variation between colors in how resistant they are to even water.
Huh.
And I saw somebody post a very, you know, emphatic video running their model painted with Mission models under a tap to prove that all of us who've had problems were wrong. But I painted some, I was using hairspray chipping, and I painted some white on something, a marking, and I was taking it off with, you know, you wet the brush and you, and you chip it off. Well, instead of chipping, the white actually just dissolved with water.
Wow.
And people can tell me that doesn't happen all day long. It happened to me. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you follow the directions. You know what you're doing. And I think I do.
Well, and I don't think the directions should... Any product where the directions take you, you know, that long to figure out, or you have to make that many measurements, I just don't really want to mess with.
Yeah.
You mentioned Vallejo Air. I'll tell you what, there are a lot of people who hate that and will say that's ridiculous you like that, but you don't like Mission models.
I've never had a bad result with anything with Vallejo Air.
I have had, the only problem I've had is they're a little bit rubbery, but they're not that. I've actually painted some models with them, and I like them. I like spraying Vallejo Air.
Yeah, I like them, and I love Tamiya.
So a couple things. First off, Will Pattison's probably going to leave us another voice message about Vallejo.
He hates Vallejo.
Oh, he hates it, and I think he'll make fun of us, but that's fine. One thing about about acrylics in general, water-based acrylics, the terminology, as you know, we know, is just all over the place. It doesn't make sense, but the water-based paints generally do not behave as well as the more you thin them down. The properties change more than with a lacquer. That's what it seems like to me, and others have said the same thing. You can thin a lacquer down to where it's almost water, and it will still spray okay.
Yeah.
You break down the water-based stuff.
Without the spritzing. Yeah, if you
put
too much
spidering thinner.
Yeah.
And you can probably get to where you don't get that and get better results, but it's way more difficult. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I want to pick up the tool. I want it to work, right?
Yeah.
If I put a drop of Tamiya in my paint cup, even if I don't thin it, it works. If I thin it, it works. Vallejo, the same thing. I don't want, you know, we're going to have a great interview when your friend recovers, but you have a friend who's a modeler who's a chemist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really eager to talk to him because I have so many questions, right? Now, also, you're in the non-humid desert of Utah. Mm-hmm. I am in the, you know, the Great Lake. Humidity is our middle name, state of Illinois, Chicago, right? You know, how much does atmospheric conditions, right? How much does the fact that I keep my paints in the garage by the airbrush, atmospheric changes, temperature changes, how much, right? I'm very curious about all of this.
Yeah.
Right? And there could be significant differences. I mean, you know, you ever buy like a bake mix? I don't know if you do any baking. You know, like Duncan Hines brownies or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's different results, you know, in the high altitude of Colorado from, you know.
Well, there's different instructions based on, on your altitude, right?
Well, I wonder if that's the same with paint.
Well, and there's just from person to person, too. Because people have different tolerances for what they'll put up with or what they like to do. I mean, some people, there are certain things I like to... Just
oven that's
at
375 is not necessarily at 375 in my house versus your house.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And some people also just have, like to maybe fiddle around with settings and, you know, mixtures and that, and that's part of the fun for them. That's totally fine.
Well, some people do nothing but fiddle around and don't ever finish a project.
Which is also fine.
Yeah, well, if that's what they're enjoying is fiddling. I keep saying, pick up the tool, want it to work. You got another one?
Well, should we keep going on the paints?
Oh, yeah. You got more to say about paint?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, and maybe this should probably be the grand finale, but I'm just going to talk about it right now. First off, I've never had a problem cleaning the Mission Models paint out of my airbrush. I don't
really
know why, but that part of it never was a problem for me.
Wow. I am thinning. I am not making any of those mistakes Fine Scale Modeler tells you every other issue not to make. And I don't know why my airbrush is, if I don't take the needle out right away, and I mean right away before spraying a second color, that's it. The airbrush won't work.
Well, what do you clean it out with?
I have lacquer thinner. I have the 90% alcohol.
Lacquer thinner won't take it out?
If I take the needle out.
Okay.
Yeah, it goops into that needle, onto that needle and into the little passageway. And just spraying, you know, a cup full of lacquer thinner through, don't do it.
Hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, you don't want to let it dry on the needle with the needle extended.
No.
So with any paint, really, but because it just makes it more difficult to clean. But I'll tell you what, if you've had problems cleaning that out of your airbrush, have you ever tried Vallejo polyurethane primer?
No.
Don't bother.
Oh. It is, good. I don't have any of that.
In my, well, and again, we'll probably get hate mail, but I'll tell you what, if you can make Vallejo primer work or you think it's good, then bring it, fine. I don't mind being criticized by those people. Because that stuff sucks bad. There is nothing good about it.
I've been loving the Style Res lately.
Style Res is not bad. That's good primer. If I had to use only a water-based primer, I would just stick with Style Res. Mm. The Vallejo primer, I don't even understand what the point of it would be. And I've heard people say, including Will Pattison, that it's probably just figure painters that like it because they don't really need it as an actual primer. And I don't even understand why figure painters would like it because it's rubbery. You can't sand it because you do sometimes need to sand a primer, primer, because you'll have a seam even on a figure where you need to do a little bit of sanding.
Well, one of the reasons you prime, you know, besides the second biggest reason after giving you a solid coat for your painting is to see those little spots you miss that need to be fixed.
Well, you want it to I mean, what I use a primer for is you want to take care of small imperfections like sanding marks or whatever.
Right.
You also want to give your paint a good base to stick to the model. the Vallejo primer does not stick to anything. It's just like, it's, do you remember when you, did you ever put the white glue on your fingers and you peel it off, you know?
Yeah.
That's what primer. It's like. Yeah.
No, that sucks.
So I have no use for it. So
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have any of that. I love the Humbrol primer.
Oh boy. Yeah. So
I've never sprayed it. I just brush it on.
And
it takes a long time to set. It takes
exactly,
a long time.
Exactly, because it's enamel. I don't understand the point of that, personally. But
it's a dead, flat, gray finish, and it sticks wonderfully and is really nice to paint on top of.
Have you tried the Mr. Surfacer, even brushing it on?
No, none of the places around here have it.
Really?
And I don't know. I've never seen a stash at a show. I know people love that.
Some people I know bring it to the show. I know I've seen it. But just order a bottle of that.
All right.
And make sure you have some of the decent, like their regular lacquer thinner, not hardware store lacquer thinner because that's too hot, but they have like their standard Mr. Color thinner. You can thin it down and brush it on. It's not as good as spraying it on, but I think you would like it more than the Humbrol primer. I rarely use enamels anymore myself just because they take too long to actually set, to actually harden.
It takes a while. You got to wait overnight. No two ways about it. All right, you know, quick detour before we hear another tool that sucks from you. Mm-hmm. I need to lay a gloss coat for this box I'm working on. I need a couple of gloss coats. I don't know how. I got 17 eyedropper bottles of everything in the Vallejo line and Reaper line and you name it, right? I'm down to like tiny, tiny drip of gloss, which I like. I brush it on. You thin it with water, and you can build up your coats, right? It's very effective for doing boots and such, right?
Yeah, get a satin finish. To get
a satin finish, right? Yeah. Not high gloss.
Right.
And I've never had the problem where it clouds my paint. You know, so I got to spray some. Now, I got a couple of the big jars. I like the size of the Mission Model paint jars. They're good size for airbrushing.
Yeah.
You got enough paint, right? The one thing bad I'll say about Vallejo is doubling back. You know, I bought a couple of those kits, like for the British aircraft when I was doing the Lancaster box, and they give you the tiny, tiny bottles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the modulation set. Right?
Those are so pointless, man. Yeah. You know, you fill your cup once and you're done.
Yeah, I've never liked those.
Anyway, I got Mission Model gloss. I've got Mission Model thinner. Am I going to hate life and ruin the stuff I've just meticulously painted if I try the Mission Models gloss? Because I'm now afraid of an anti Mission Models paint. But have you used the gloss before you sent it to me?
I think I did a test with it, and it didn't seem any better or worse than any other acrylic or water based gloss. But the thing is, wait, what do you need to get to a high gloss again? What are you going to be painting with?
No. I'm doing paneled walls, right? Like your first box diorama. We talked about the other day.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Plus, you know, there's like snow on the ground, and I got to like gloss up the vehicle's tires and stuff after I've muddied them and put slush on them.
For that kind of stuff, I think you're fine. Just make sure you do tests. And like you said, thin it way down and build the satin up. And you don't want to get it too glossy.
No, thin it with their thinner.
I would try water and see what it's like.
All right, a couple of tests.
Their thinner is kind of hot. It's you might melt. What is your undercoat is an acrylic, right?
Yeah.
I would do some testing because it could melt that. It could lift some of that up. But try water, and again, very thin coats. But
I like water. Readily
where you
available.
Would want, yeah. Where you would
and cheap,
right? Where you'd have to worry is if you wanted to get a high gloss, like automotive,
brilliant
type of gloss.
Brilliant
because
finish.
There you want to have something that's sandable. I don't know of any acrylic that really works that well sanding it to a high gloss. But there, you know, there are some good lacquers from Mr. Color to do that if you wanted to do that on a car sometime.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, like I said, I got no ventilation in the garage, so spraying lacquer makes me wary.
Yeah.
You know, despite having grown up in Jersey City, you know, like Cancer Alley, but I don't want to exacerbate my exposure to toxic chemicals.
Right. Well, I wonder if you could just, you could route your, like a, get a dryer hose and route it up around over to the ceiling and out the side wall there by your garage door. Is that, that sounds
drilling
bad,
a hole in the wall?
Yeah.
Up the brick wall of the garage?
Yeah, it's cinder block, right?
No, it's like brick. It's Chicago brick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
That seems like a ways to go. All right, you got another product that sucks?
Well, you were talking about Humbrol.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, when they changed the formula, they completely ruined the paint. And I don't understand how anybody can paint with most of the colors that have come out since, what, the mid-90s? Or, yeah, I guess it was about the mid-90s when they changed the formula. I can't remember what they called it. It was like, I think the bottle said new formula or something.
Yeah.
You remember
and
that?
And they fancied it up. Yeah.
Yeah. When they came out with the white, the newer white tins. But back in the 70s and 80s, that was the best paint. And people who have not used it back then have no memory of this. But you could brush on Humbrol to where it looked like it was airbrushed. And you got a perfect velvet flat finish.
Yeah.
It was really nice paint.
That's what I like about the primer. And I have a couple of new tins as well as a bunch of old tins. That hasn't changed. But I noticed that other colors have significantly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so most of the colors I've tried have changed to where they don't
useless.
Cover well. They're inconsistent. I don't like them in general. But yeah, they definitely ruined those.
There was a conversation at the MMSI show a couple of years ago, I think it was, or just a year or two. Rick Taylor was talking to Greg DeFranco and Bill Horan, and Taylor had a stash of unopened Scarlet Humbrol tins, and Bill Horan, you would think Bill Horan had won the Mega Millions lottery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because people are so covetous of those older, untampered with, unchanged Humbrol tins, right? I just remember Shep always telling me, and I agree with him, how difficult it was to open and seal those tins.
I never thought it was difficult, and they seal better than what you would imagine, especially if you clean the lip, you know, don't just glop. But it's too much work.
It is a pain in the neck. It's another one of those things you can't just reach for the tool and have it work.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so nice about the eyedropper bottles that I know Joe likes to make fun of us for.
Our friend Joe Burton.
But they're so convenient.
They are.
A couple drops. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I always my nozzles always get clogged. I got to keep a pin handy and
brass wire and open it back up. Right.
Yeah, I know. But sometimes it gets a little certain colors. And this again is a question for your chemist pal. Mm-hmm. Why is it that certain colors, certain pigments, get gloppier than others? That harden more than others? And sometimes you really got to go to work, right? And on a rare occasion, you got to take the nozzle off and really clean it off, right?
Yeah.
And man, I've done that. I've tried it with pliers. I've tried using my teeth, and invariably, then I spill the stuff all over the place. It's not doing what I want, and it's actually causing me damage, you know.
Yeah, I think they could improve the bottles. There's got to be a way to make them a bit better. But you can. What I'll do is every once in a while, I'll take the nozzle out and soak it in some alcohol and get it, completely clean it out.
Yeah.
Because it generally is right up in the neck of the the dropper.
That tiny little neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, you got another one?
I think it's your turn.
Well, I just dissed everything I've ever bought from Mission Models, but I'm happy to go again. Here's something you made me buy, a Flexi file, right?
Yeah.
Now, I had one, and it didn't do much for me. And then we were at IPMS Nats, and you said, oh, you really need this stuff, right? And, I, you know, that sandpapery stuff that you put in the... I don't know. I've never gotten it to work.
The sanding film?
Yeah. Versus the good old sanding sticks, which I cut up into, you know, I get 5 or 6 from one of the bigger sticks, right? I can't get this damn thing to work. Why did I buy it?
Really? You don't like that, huh?
I don't like it.
So you know what I like it for, and I think I mentioned at the time, something you can't do with those sanding sticks is if you have a figure where you want to get rid of the seam between the legs, those flexophiles are great for that. It's almost like they're made for that. That's probably 90% of what I use it for. Because you can't get those sticks all the way up, you know, to where in a really thin place. So
I think I'm using it correctly. You know, I try, and then it just doesn't seem to do any actual sanding.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe you need the higher grit. Are you
the higher grit? Yeah, I know. I got you know, an envelope full of like 6 or 8 different grits. You know, and it's like.
If somebody, the first thing I think of when somebody says sandpaper isn't working is, are you putting water on it?
I haven't tried wet sanding.
You have to, in most cases, wet sanding is going to be the way to go for almost everything. For me, because you're going to clog up any sandpaper if you aren't wet sanding with it. I mean, there are some papers that are not made to be wet, you know, wettable, but...
Yeah.
Generally, you want to use sandpaper that is, and those films work a lot better if you have a little bit of water on them.
I did not think about that.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, you're schooling me. You know, we should have started with this one, but when we were doing tools that we love, both of us instantly agreed that we have, of the many pin vices in both of our collections, we have never been able to get the push vice to work.
Yeah.
The spring-loaded push vise. They don't work. They don't work for me. They don't work for you. We had a vociferous defender.
Yeah. Well, he was very polite, but... Tim Campbell mentioned him, and I'd never realized they were called this, but they're called an Archimedes drill or an Archimedean drill.
What?
Until he said that. I've never heard that before, because I always just... I remember the bigger ones. My grandfather had one out in the garage. And those actually worked, but I'm going to get one and try it again. But still, watching people demonstrate them, the way you have to hold it, it's not as controllable to me.
No.
And maybe I'm just doing it wrong, but the way you have to push into whatever you're drilling and hold it, it's not as precise to me.
Well, your basic pin vise is a one-hand job, right?
Yeah.
We talked about using the dissection probe or other pointy instrument to start the hole, a little more reliable, controllable than the tip of your X-Acto. Mm-hmm. And then you come in with your pin vise and you want to just drill, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that you got to juggle sometimes the piece, but even if you've got the piece secured, you know, one hand on the pin vise, the other pushing the push vise, I don't know, I've never...
Well, I'm going to try it again because I can't say that I've used it extensively, a miniature one. So I'm going to give it a try again.
Tim said don't understand what you guys are talking about. It really works for me. And again, you know, some people may have great results with all the stuff we've been dissing, but
yeah.
I think you've more than demonstrated your patience to master most tools. So when you say something ain't working, I mean, with me, I could just be an idiot. I nearly kill myself twice with a table saw, but it's
so
been a
bad
while.
You forgot one of the times.
Yeah, I did forget that one with the chest. I had it broke the skin.
Yeah,
it was like I got shot. It is Chicago. I got one more. If you don't have anything else,
yeah, I have plenty.
Well, bring
in,
it.
In the
bring
hopper.
It. What else you got?
So we mentioned this when we talked recently, but these little sanding needles.
Oh yeah,
had
staying
them,
on sanding. Yeah,
I don't know if they're still selling them or not, but
I've seen them at recent shows.
really. But they're just these molded plastic sticks with an abrasive added.
Right.
And the shape of them looked really handy when I first saw them.
I agree. I bought a bunch of them.
But the first problem when you start to use them that you realize is that they have big sprue nubs.
Yeah.
That you have to cut off. But also the mold is off center so that the halves are off with each other. Mm-hmm. They're very rough. And so you only have two surfaces that you can sand on. But also, they don't sand, like what you're saying about the sanding film.
Flexifile. Yeah, I know. And you know, that plastic that they're molded in, so why would we use this? Let's say we've got a seam in the crotch of a figure, right? And we're trying to get it a little smoother, right? That's a good or a fold in a hard place to get to, right? You know, you would think that this needle-shaped thing would be perfect for that, except then you go to use it, and either it bends too quickly, or it doesn't sand, or it... I've never gotten one to work.
No, I think I'm going to have to just throw them away, because they just plain do not sand anything. And the abrasive comes right off, too, by the way.
Yeah.
In my experience. Yeah. But, yeah. Maybe somebody will tell us what we're doing wrong with them, but I don't think so.
Maybe you got to wet them.
I've tried that, and it's just not for me. Maybe other people like them.
Well, I keep, I've had many more than you. I want to hear more Bietiger things that you hate.
I don't know. I think they're pretty even, aren't they?
No, I did the entire mission line.
Well, I helped you with that, though.
Yeah.
All right, I did the sanding rods. Another thing recently that, this is so frustrating, but it also is a lesson. Don't cheap out on stuff.
No, buy the right tool for the job and the best tool.
Yeah, I cheaped out on something that I didn't think I had to worry about because I just needed some metal blocks to like hold pieces together for you know, like hold something straight up and down. Like when I'm gluing a wall together, I want to, you know, just have them, something to hold it up. And so I thought, yeah, I'll just get some metal blocks. How bad can they be? So I ordered some off of Amazon, and they're just steel blocks about 3x3x3/4. There is no surface that is at 90 degree angle. Not a single one.
Oh, so, man. You got to send me a picture of those.
Yeah. So the set of three, I think, cost like $5 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What I really should have done is got a machinist block or a 1-2-3 block or a set of them. I don't know if you've seen those. But
no.
Our friend Will is a big proponent of them. They're basically a steel block with threaded holes that you can make like jigs, basically, to hold stuff together. But the lesson is, cheaping out is not necessarily the way to go.
No, that is, you know, you want to buy a tool that you can rely on. I mean, I was struck the other day. I have this hammer, and I have this screwdriver, and they were my dad's, my real dad's. It died when I was 5. You know, so these things have now got to be 75 years old. And they're perfect. You know, they work perfectly. And when I think about how many mini screwdrivers and even hammers, I've had hammers break. You know, and I might be rough on stuff. I am a drummer. Man,
the hammer though.
Well, it was a ball peen hammer. It was a jeweler's hammer. Really,
let me guess.
Nice,
the top came
one.
Off, right? The top came loose and came off. Yeah.
Yeah. It split. The wood split.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a good hammer is worth paying for.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, the metal block thing. You convinced me at IPM. Like I said, we walk around the show. You see a tool. You say you need this. All right,
and it's like sometimes you already have it. It's a flexi file, and you hate it. So,
well, yeah, maybe I haven't wet it. I'm gonna go spit on my flexi file as soon as we're done talking, and that's another question for the chemist. Why spit works so much better than than water sometimes. Where was I going? Oh, you know, you had me buy two of those L-shaped, like, they're not rulers because they're not
marked. The little machinist squares?
The little machinist squares. Those are really cool.
Yeah, they're very handy.
You know, it's a big block of steel on the bottom and then a straight L shape. So especially to do walls. Yeah, those. You had me buy the big one and the little one.
Yeah.
But I was doing a bunch of walls for this current project, and I wound up getting epoxy glue all over the bottom of that metal. I've got to go sand it off.
Yeah, no, they're cool. Have you seen that thing that Micromark sells? It's just a metal, it's just a steel tray, and it comes with magnets.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not that much money, and you could probably cobble something together a lot easier, especially if you live around industry, but that is one of the best purchases I've bought.
You know, Micromark is so hit and miss.
Yeah.
I have bought great stuff from them, and I have bought utter crap, like eBay level, made in China.
Right.
Level.
No, absolutely. Junk. I've had the same exact exact thing with them. But this metal plate or this metal tray, it's just basically a steel tray with 90 degree sides. It comes with magnets, and it's really handy for putting walls together. It's been much handier than some of the special jigs made to put, you know, two pieces of wood together.
I bought the Micromark special jigs for, like, you know, doing dollhouse furniture, right?
Yeah.
And they are utterly useless.
Well, did you get the one where you can put two walls together at a 90-degree angle? It's kind of a vice.
It's not. It wasn't a one-piece thing. They were individual, like, you know, not like alligator clips, but screwable.
Yeah,
a little rod.
It's about 4,000 pieces that you have to align and all that, right?
Yes, I mean, yes. You spend more time aligning the tool than aligning the piece you're trying to get straight. Utterly use it. And then what happens is you buy this stuff and you spent money on it. And it looks good. It might even look good, like the Etchmate and the Grab Handler. They just don't work. And then I can't bring myself to get rid of them.
Yeah, I've had the same exact thing, because that one tool, the device to do the walls, is, you know, a lot more expensive than it probably should have been. But it's like a puzzle more than anything.
It is. It's like doing the Rubik's Cube before you want to get to the tricky thing that's tricky enough that you're trying to get straight.
But you know what's been handy for me that I discovered to do, to put like when we're doing our outer boxes for our box dioramas, to get at that 90-degree angle, nail them together or screw them together or just glue them together. You can get these miter jigs at Ace Hardware. That's where I got mine. And it clamps to the table, and you just, it's just a simple 90-degree clamp that clamps two flat pieces together.
I've been making my own frames, I did get one of those at Menards, and that works like a charm.
That's great.
I only bought one because it was expensive and it's heavy. I only bought one, so that means I have to wait for the glue to set on each corner of my frame. But I love it so much, I'm going to go get another one so I can at least do two sides at a time. That is great.
Yeah, that works, and it's cheap.
But it's not going to work with a really small, like, you know, say you're building a 1/35 scale outhouse. That's not going to work.
Yeah, but that's when you can use other things like the machinist squares and magnets and stuff like that.
I love the machinist square. That was a purchase. All right, I'm going to do one more that is a purchase that you had me buy. That the jury's out. I'm not going to say I completely hate it, but I bought the Infinity or Infinity. The Easy Cutting.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I bought it. It looks so cool. I bought all four of them, right? Four different, you know, shapes, right? And every time I've gone to use it. Now, what is this for? This is an etched piece of plastic acrylic material that you want to put your masking tape down on, and you can get really, really, really fine strips, right? Mm-hmm. Way finer and more precise than using the ruler on your cutting mat and the masking tape, right? You know, and I do a lot of sheet lead and, you know, the thin stuff. belts and such, right? And I thought, oh, this is going to be a charm. And every time I've gone to use it, you want to use a sharp X-Acto knife because you want to get it in this little groove so you stay straight. Either, you know, it doesn't work well at all for a material that's much thicker than, to me, a masking tape.
I don't think it's made for something like metal, like foil or something.
No, I thought I'd try. I tried paper, too, and that's tricky to get it to stay in place. You know, all right, so masking tape. I'll just use it for masking tape. And then I was doing some very precise shapes, I think, for the Lancaster striping. And that acrylic material was gouged by the knife, by the X-Acto knife.
Okay.
I went out of the, you know, I slipped a little bit and went out of the groove because it's a really fine groove, right?
Sure.
And then it gouges the shape. And granted, there's like, you know, 100 of these grooves on this thing, you know, but I've already screwed up 2 or 3 of them.
So
now I have a gouged piece of acrylic material that is not giving me the precision I wanted.
What kind of masking tape were you using?
I was using the good old Tamiya.
Okay.
All right, so, I also tried the 3M.
You know how I was saying before, some tools, some people love and other people just don't for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault. Well, in this case, I think you're wrong.
And yeah, I know you love this thing.
Well, what it tells me is you might be using, if anytime you are scribing or cutting or doing something along a with a ruler or some sort of straight edge and you go off the line, chances are you're pushing too hard. You're trying to get too much done with one cut. You're trying to
A heavy hand. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, that's going to be the cause of that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I can see where that could happen and you've screwed up one of the lines.
Yeah.
I absolutely love mine. It's one of the best inventions ever.
So, yeah, I know. You said that. That's why I spent the cash money.
Yeah. I'll buy them from you.
Well, they're all gouged up now. What do you need them for?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I don't want to buy them.
Yeah. We should both just go to the garbage can and put that stuff in the Mission Models paint. Yeah. Although, I'm a sucker, right? I don't want to make a trip to the hobby store, which in Chicago is, you know, we just have these railroad places and one railroad place, one fantasy place. The chance that they'll have what I need anyway. I hate having to go to Amazon or, you know, I don't want to buy more gloss finish when I've got some here. I just want what I have to work.
I understand.
Wine. We're complaining. This is why we're never going to have any sponsors.
Well, one thing that since you mentioned the masking tape, this is the last thing I was going to talk about.
Okay.
And I wasn't even going to talk about it until you, and I thought, yeah, since he mentioned it.
Good.
Which kind of masking tape you use really does matter. I don't care what people say or how many times they tell me that blue painter's tape is the same thing as Tamiya masking tape.
It's not. It's way thicker.
It's thicker. It's rougher.
Yeah.
It's more fibrous to where cutting a straight line, a nice smooth line, is not as good. The closest I've come to the, not just Tamiya, but the washi tape in general, the rice paper tape. And you can get those packs of scrapbooking tape on Amazon for dirt cheap.
I got it. It doesn't stick to anything for me.
Well, how much do you need it to stick?
Well, I was trying to put some on some plastic.
The MT washi tape that did I send you a link to it?
Yeah, and I bought it.
You don't like that, huh? See, so it's not always successful when I recommend stuff. But I love that stuff.
I've spent a lot of money on your behalf, on your recommendation on stuff that hasn't worked.
That's something I will buy from you because I love that stuff.
Well, I got one more thing to try it on. I'm going to see if I can't get it to work on this miniature pole lamp I'm building. Because it bugs me that the model I was trying to duplicate, the photograph, mid-century modern pole lamp table, had designs on it. And, you know, painting was not working. Plastic strip, really fine plastic strip, was not working. I'm going to try the washi tape.
Well, give it a try.
I'm going to try both the washi tape cut on my Infinity Easy Cutting mat. I'm going to see if I can get these two things that have not so far worked for me to work.
Maybe try not rubbing it on your nose before you stick it to something. I've never had it not stick. It always sticks. Well, huh. I mean, it's the tack is great because it doesn't pull up paint, the low tack of it, but it still always sticks.
All right, I'm going to try.
Do you like paw it for a while before you stick it onto something? Or?
No, and I've never rubbed it on my nose. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, I don't know.
Was that the Biediger dry, sarcastic humor?
It was.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right, well, what is your favorite masking tape then? You brought up masking tape.
Well, that MT washi tape, and I like the Tamiya.
I love the Tamiya.
And also the Mr. Hobby has, I don't know if it's the same exact manufacturer as the Tamiya tape, but it's very similar. You can get different types of washi tape that have different properties. If you have scrapbooking stores, you can get it for fairly cheap. But try different kinds and see which one you like.
All right, I bought the kind you sent me a link to.
one thing I'll say is people will say the frog tape is the same stuff, like I said.
It's not.
No, it's not. The yellow frog tape, however, is not bad for a lot of things.
I've tried the green frog tape, and it sucks.
No, the green frog tape is not the same. But the yellow frog tape is the closest I've seen to the Tamiya type tape. It's not the exact same thing. You'll hear people say it is the same thing. It's not. Mm. It's more fibrous. It's not quite as easy to cut. The tack is a little bit different. But it is not bad for some things.
I love the old blue 3M.
The painter's tape?
Yeah.
But it's for hard most to things, cut into
but not,
strips.
Not for,
stuff, yeah.
not for the, you know, really fine striping.
Yeah, yeah.
Or,
right.
you know. That to me is best, and then after that I go through, you know, it's gotten really expensive. Like a roll of blue masking tape 3M is like $7-$8.
Yeah That's what's funny to me about it's like with when we talked about paintbrushes. I'm not gonna spend that much for a Series 7 brush, but
that'll
it's like a couple bucks
forever.
More than another than an off brand.
The
washi tape is actually generally cheaper.
Really cheap, yeah.
Than the blue tape. That's why I don't quite get why people think that getting frog tape or blue masking tape is any better or they're saving money. I don't get it.
You know, it's people have different preferences.
Yep.
So these things didn't work for us. That was the point of this show, not to tell anybody else they're doing anything wrong. And not to alienate half the manufacturers in this hobby.
Yeah. Only some.
We have some business on the way out, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. First off, we haven't mentioned for, I think, a while, modelpodcast.com, which lists a lot of the modeling podcasts. So go take a look at that.
Our fellow podcasters,
As we talked about on the last episode, we were talking about doing a group build, and I made a poll. People selected fantasy busts as the topic, so there's a small subjects fantasy bust group build. We're calling it group build because that's what, you know, that's the term. It's really a group paint, probably, right?
Right. Everybody. Well, nobody's getting together and doing it together because we're far flung across the world.
There's not much building either, but it's...
No, but the response has been tremendous.
It has been great. And so go check that out. At the same time, I figured, you know, we need a place for people to just hang out and post things they're working on and whatever. So I made what we're calling the Small Subjects Hospitality Suite, which is where people can just go in and talk about anything to do with figure modeling.
I would prefer that first they leave us a voicemail message after visiting our blog or following the link from any of your social media posts so that we can get people's voices on the show.
That would be nice too, but I mean, those are two separate things, right? I mean, sometimes you...
No, they are. You can't show us a picture on the podcast.
We'll get more voice messages next time probably.
I love the voice messages.
Yeah, they've been fun. I think that we'll probably get some complaints and people calling us names with this one.
Or, you know, we fully mentioned that we might just be idiots using these things the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always open to that possibility.
Because we can't throw anything out, right?
Oh.
So I've still got all the stuff I just dissed. If someone wants to tell me what I was doing wrong, like you said, wet the flexi file. It doesn't say that on the instructions, right? All right, I'm going to try wetting my flexi file. You know, tell us. I'm happy to know how to make use of this stuff I spent money on.
Well, I'll tell you some things that they're not good enough to keep around. And I've thrown things away, definitely. Like
those sanding sticks.
Like Vallejo primer. Actually, I've kept the sanding sticks because that's something I just want them to work. But I can't will them to work.
They look like they should work. Yeah. That's the thing. They really look like they... You know, I found a variation of that that looks like a Q-tip. That's a plastic rod with a round abrasive end on the end. It's like a Q-tip, but for sanding.
Yeah, no problem.
And it's a little big. You know, it would be tough to do a 54 millimeter figure. Yeah. But it's been good for some things. Mm. I got a lot of sanding stuff
here. We'll have to link to that.
I'll have to check that out. I don't even know where I got it. Some show. I bought a pack of them. You know, you buy one pack, and then it's like the greatest thing ever, and then you go to try to find it again. And All right. So the small subjects hospitality suite, the fantasy group. You even Joan Biediger is doing a bus. I haven't selected anything. I haven't started anything. I'm working on this ambitious box.
Well, yeah, you got a lot of stuff going on, but I'll send you some links to some fantasy bus, see if I can get your imagination going.
All right. Okay. I don't think I've ever done any bust. And precious few are the fan. Even the fantasy I've done has been like historical witches.
You have done bus, yeah.
What? No, I didn't. Well, Edgar Allan Poe. I did that.
You did Rosie the Riveter.
I might be getting the old timers disease, forgetting stuff I did. We played Fortis, my punk rock band, played in Milwaukee last night. And on the way home, we were talking about big gigs that we played that we barely remembered.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got three guys, and those guys, you know, are 10 and 15 years younger than me. You know, we're talking about, where was that place where we were standing out in the freezing cold? Might have been in Pilsen. And, you know, and it smelled like cat pee. And, you know, we're like, I don't remember that gig at all.
No, that's pretty natural. That's normal.
I guess so.
Well, I must be getting old because it took me about a half hour to figure out why you sent me that. You forwarded me that email from Tony.
I had sent it to Tony, and then I thought you'd enjoy it as well.
Yeah, it took me a while. But then I realized, oh, it's the attachment.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So, well, if you had an Apple, that just the picture just pops up.
No, it popped up, but I thought it was just part of the signature block. If I had an Apple.
Oh, no.
If I had an... Apples are not the only computers that show images.
I know. I just said that to get you going. All right. Small Subject Fantasy Group, Small Subject Hospitality Suite.
Yeah.
You wanted to plug the Moosaroo Cup one more time.
I just wanted to mention that I haven't forgotten about it. So the Moosaroo Cup is the Arma Hobbies... P-51B group build. Somebody from each podcast is building it, and we're hanging out on a Facebook chat group, and you know, people are gearing up again, and I've got the cockpit done, and I'm starting to think about finishing it up, actually working on it. So
you seem to need these group builds and challenges to get something started, much less finished. It's like doing this podcast with me and having me call you all the time about, I've got this challenge, I've got that challenge, this isn't working, that is, or sending you my pictures. That's not enough to keep you motivated?
I think I'm just one, I'm a daydreamer. I think I'm probably the worst daydreamer around. And so unless I have something concrete to do something for, I tend to just think about it and do nothing more than that.
Wow.
So, yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
All right. Is there a deadline for the small subjects? I mean, I'm 50% of this endeavor. I feel guilty that I haven't even
chosen
a bus, much less started it. Is there a dead? What is the
for
goal?
The small subjects fantasy bus group build? There's no deadline. I mean, we'll just keep it open until people lose interest. But we some soft deadlines. It would be nice to have a small display of people who have participated in it. Probably mostly people who live in the U.S. Display their bus at the MFCA show in May.
Oh, okay.
And also at the MMSI show in October.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, October's doable.
Yeah. And
May, I may or not be done with this box diorama by then.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And for those that live in...
I got all sorts of challenges on this one that I've never set myself. And mostly they're succeeding. Sometimes it takes three times.
That's the way scratch building is and creating something, right?
It is. It is. I find that so fascinating. I said this to you the other day. What I love about doing a diorama is having to challenge myself with so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just painting, or it's not just the model building. It's scratch building and different media and plastic and wood. And I just love that.
I think the scratch building and painting are probably minor parts of the whole thing. Actually creating the concept and working mm-hmm. with it and making it work as far as composition and that are by far the most difficult parts.
Well, and continually tweaking.
Yeah.
You know, I just moved this diorama tray to position to the left of my workbench where it's at eye view, because I swear, you know, I can look at something 100 times and then come back and just a simple turn of half an inch, you know, I have a cardboard mock-up of the viewing window mm-hmm. and it's like you turn half an inch and everything changes.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and you want to live with the thing and continually tweak that viewing window.
That's
or what's going to be seen.
It's very true. And that's one of the best things about box dioramas is the yes. surprises that happen. Things yes. that are unexpected.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be.
And I even like the challenges, the problems that I suddenly face yeah. that I have to come up with a solution.
Yeah,
for.
It can be frustrating at times, but it also, I would 9 times out of 10, the surprises you see are actually positive things. Things that spark other yeah. ideas, or you like some effect that happened that you didn't realize was going to happen.
Well, there is a real satisfaction from having a problem and solving it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Shep used to always say that was his favorite part of it. So I think that's everything we were talking about. Like I said, we have a bunch of great interviews coming up. I'm excited about.
Yeah.
And looks like we're entering another year, Mr. Biedeker.
That's right. Hopefully it's a little better than the last one.
22 was tough.
It was.
21 was tougher, though. I mean, it's been just kind of a sucky time, which is why when you reach for a tool, you want it to work.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Something should work.
That's right.
All right. Well, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
To comment on anything we've said in this or any episode, or to pose a question for us to answer, click on the link at www.boxdioramas.com/smallsubjects. We also have that in all of our social media posts.